And here we are off and running on this Tuesday, January the 21st, 2020, 11 minutes past the hour on this Tuesday morning. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are, and we've got a great show planned for you this morning. Now, we are going to do trivia and talk about a whole lot of things that we did not get to yesterday, and maybe some things that we did get to yesterday and have some fun with that. But also this morning, from 8:30 until 9 o'clock, we are going to be joined by the Marion County Board of Elections, Cindy Price and Brian Blair from the Marion County Board of Elections, because there were a lot of interesting things coming up very quickly. We have a primary election coming up on March the 17th. We want to talk about the candidates. We want to talk about the issues. We want to talk about voter registration, in-person absentee voting, no-excuse voting, the voting equipment and how it works, sample ballots, the website, that there is going to be a candidate, or it's a candidates class on April 22nd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Poll workers, any questions you might have about the Marion County Board of Elections, we are going to get to this morning between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, because during the last election, and maybe during the last couple elections, there has been a little confusion when it comes to this. Who's doing what and how it works and what's going on. And we've heard these questions, and obviously people in the community are asking these questions. So from 8:30 to 9 o'clock, hopefully we're going to answer quite a few of these questions. So Cindy and Brian will be in this morning from 8:30 to 9. So what we want to do here to start off the morning is read our bicentennial moment. In 1838, a black man by the name of Bill Anderson, or Bill Mitchell, settled in Marion after escaping bondage in Virginia. His alleged owner eventually traced Bill to Marion and demanded he be allowed to retrieve his property. In a court hearing regarding the matter, Judge Oasis Bowen refused the request, resulting in the owner and his friends drawing weapons with a tussle then ensuing. With help from several Marion residents, Bill escaped the room, made his way to temporary safety in Morrow County, and eventually to Canada. How about that? That's today's bicentennial moment for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. That's an interesting story. 1838, Bill Anderson, or Bill Mitchell, however he was known, had a very interesting episode here in Marion. And apparently some guns were drawn and there was a tussle, but Bill made it to safety in Canada. So that's an upbeat story. That's a very good bicentennial moment for the day. We did get a flyer yesterday, and of course we try to be a station that lets everybody know what's going on in the community. The Morrow United Methodist Church, located at 206 West Neff Street in Morrow, is having an old-fashioned farm breakfast from 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Saturday, January the 25th. It's an all-you-can-eat old-fashioned farm breakfast that will be served. Sausage, gravy, and biscuits, bacon, sausage, pancakes, scrambled eggs, home fries, orange juice, and coffee will be on the menu. Carry out is also available. The church is wheelchair accessible. Now, the price for this, can you imagine this? This is great. $6 for adults, $3 for children 12 and under. That's the Morrow United Methodist Church, 206 West Neff Street in Morrow, Ohio. old-fashioned farm breakfast, 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Saturday, January the 25th, which would be this coming Saturday. And that's always been a big event. I know we've advertised that before, and to get that kind of food, sausage, gravy, and biscuits, bacon, sausage, pancakes, scrambled eggs, home fries, orange juice, and coffee, all will be on the menu. And also to know that carryout is available, so I assume if you just want to get your food and go or want somebody to come and pick up the food for you, that is absolutely doable, and that is a great thing. You know, when I read that, and I'm sure the food is delicious over there, it always brings me up to something. I probably said this before on the air. I am just not a fan of gravy. Now, I don't know why that is. It's a funny thing. It's kind of like peanut butter, because I tell people that I don't like peanut butter. But here's the thing with peanut butter. I don't dislike it. Like, I don't have an aversion to peanut butter. I would not be the person to eat a peanut butter sandwich. If you offered me a Reese cup, it would not be my favorite kind of candy. Buckeyes are not necessarily my favorite, the candy, of course. So peanut butter is just not something I like a whole lot. A matter of fact, I had a family member. This just popped in my head. I hadn't thought about this for years. I had a family member. I don't know where this came from. I've never seen anybody eat this before or since. But they would take a graham cracker, like a cinnamon graham cracker, and they would get a big mug of tea, warm tea, and they would take that cinnamon graham cracker and they would smear it with peanut butter, and then they would dip that into the tea, and that would kind of be their dessert. I've never seen anybody eat that since. I've never seen anybody eat that before I saw this person eat that. I don't even know where that came from. But they would just take a big cinnamon graham cracker, smear the top of it with peanut butter, get a big glass of warm tea, and eat it like that. And I, you know, that was never good looking to me because I am not a big fan of peanut butter. Now, if somebody offers me something with peanut butter on it, I can eat it. I mean, it's not like I hate peanut butter. It's not something that tastes particularly good to me, in the way that people just eat it out of the jar, and Reese cups are the greatest thing in the world, and that whole bit, I just can't do it. And I kind of feel that way with gravy. Every time I've ever went camping in my life, the breakfast seems to always consist of sausage, gravy, and biscuits or something like that, and I am just not a fan of that at all. A matter of fact, I can honestly say I don't know that I've ever eaten sausage, gravy, and biscuits for breakfast. Now, I can say that I have been to restaurants where there's like mashed potatoes and gravy, and like maybe fried chicken or something like that. I have eaten that. You know, I've been to KFC or Lee's, and they'll have the mashed potatoes and the gravy. Now, I have had that, and I've dipped biscuits in that. But really, that's been the extent of it. If I'm at somebody's house and they have gravy, or they're cooking gravy, or anything like that, I never put gravy on the food. I was never a big fan of what is the steak that people put gravy on? What is the name of that steak? They call that something. Does anybody know the steak that people put gravy on? And I'm not even really sure if it's really a steak. You know, it to me, it always tasted more like chicken. What is that steak that people put gravy on? Does anybody know? 740-383-9944. Also, what is the difference between the gravy you get at KFC or Lee's Chicken or places like that and sausage gravy? Because I'm really trying, I know, obviously, there's sausage in the sausage gravy, but I'm trying to rack my mind if I've ever had sausage gravy. So I'm not even sure what that really tastes like. If I have had it, the taste of it has totally gone out of my mouth and memory, and I have no memory of it. So does anybody know what the steak is that has gravy on it? Because I'm not a huge fan of that. And what is it? What's the difference between regular gravy that you get at the kind of fast food chicken places and sausage gravy that you cook for breakfast? And is there anything more to sausage gravy than just sausage and grease and flour? Is that really all the recipe calls for? Because that's what I usually see people cooking when they're cooking sausage biscuits and gravy. Obviously, they get the biscuits ready, but they're basically just putting sausage in with the grease and the flour. So I don't know. Is that all there is to it? Does anybody know the answers to these questions? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a call. Oh, I'm getting word here that, the steak that has gravy on it is country fried steak. Now, I don't know why that's called country fried steak, and I don't even really think that's steak. Is that steak? Do they take, like, what we would call... You know, I was looking at steaks last night. I was at a restaurant. And, you know, we have, like, sirloin and T-bone and all these different kind of steaks. That's not really what country fried steak is. Country fried steak, to me, always looked more like chicken. What exactly is the makeup of country fried steak? And why are we putting gravy on top of this? Is that what makes it country fried steak? What would it be if we did not put gravy on top of whatever that particular meat is? I don't even know where you would buy this. Oh, and there is Salisbury steak. I forgot about Salisbury steak. Salisbury steak has gravy on it. And Salisbury steak has that very thick brown gravy. And there is something to that, you know, I have eaten Salisbury steak. Like, you know what's funny to me? TV dinners have not, they used to be so popular. Everybody used to eat TV dinners, and people would have them for the kids. Matter of fact, I remember there was even a TV dinner that was specifically for kids at one point called Kid Cuisine. Do you remember the Kid Cuisine? And it would come with like a toy or a little piece of candy in it or a brownie or something. And one of the big popular TV dinners was always Salisbury steak. But I thought, honestly, that the Salisbury steak that you got out of the TV dinner was always better than the Salisbury steak that was homemade. Because here's what happens when people make stuff homemade. They have a tendency to put all kinds of spices in it and things that are normally not going to be put into the TV dinners or the stuff you get in restaurants. And it does change the texture, and it does change the makeup of that stuff. And maybe that's one of the reasons I don't like gravy, because I'm also not a fan of pepper. I don't like a whole lot of pepper. So when somebody heavily peppers something, that's a complete turnoff to me. Like some of the hamburgers in restaurants, I really don't like because they overpepper them. And I don't. Does anybody know that? Now that's an interesting question. Why do restaurants put pepper on their hamburgers so heavily? I mean, I'm sure there's salt in there, and I'm sure there's other stuff that go in, but you can really see the pepper on the top of some of those hamburgers. And you all know what chain I'm talking about that really uses the most pepper, where if you get rid of the bun and if you get rid of the other stuff on that hamburger, if you would just order that hamburger plain with a bun, you could really taste the pepper. What is it that pepper does to a hamburger that changes the chemical makeup so much? Let me know. 740-383-9944. 24 minutes past the hour. Remember, we are going to talk to the Board of Elections here from 8:30 until 9 o'clock this morning, get everything squared away there. But 9:15 to 10 o'clock, we're going to be back with trivia and a whole lot of things to talk about, like things that we talked about yesterday, as well as some other stuff that we did not get to yesterday. So that will be coming up this morning in the 9 o'clock hour. You won't want to miss that. But I'm not sure why they heavily pepper those hamburgers in those restaurants. I'm not exactly sure what that pepper is supposed to do. But they do it. I don't know if it's some kind of preservative or masking some kind of taste. And I'm also getting word this morning that somebody is saying they make the best sausage gravy. Well, now see, how would I know that if I've never tasted the sausage gravy? And to be honest, in my own mind, I don't remember ever tasting sausage gravy at all. So that I'm really behind in the game when it comes to that particular thing. So I'm not sure if they're offering to make sausage gravy and bring it. Maybe that's what they're offering. But I don't know about this person who's offering to make the sausage gravy, because this is one of those people who's offered to bring me a pop when we see each other every day, you know, a large diet pop from McDonald's. And, what I really wanted them to do was bring a large diet pop from McDonald's and also a bacon ranch salad with grilled chicken and ranch dressing from McDonald's, but this person has not shown up with that yet either. So, a far cry that they will ever show up with sausage gravy if they can't bring that order from McDonald's. I don't see them getting in the kitchen and making sausage gravy, although I probably would test it. I'm not saying I would eat the whole thing, because I do have an aversion to gravy and peanut butter, as I've told you, but I would try it. I would give it a try. Maybe. There's just, I don't know. It's one of those long-term things. They'll bring me sausage gravy. Okay, I got word now that maybe sausage gravy will be showing up. Now, will it show up today? We don't know. But at some point, sausage gravy will show up. If it does show up, I'll make sure to get a picture of it so we can share it online, because everything has to be visual now. And then I will try this sausage gravy and report back to you how it goes. Oh, this person also says they'll bring a Coke. Well, make sure it's a Diet Coke, because a large Diet Coke from McDonald's, because I'll have to make sure to wash that sausage gravy down somehow if it's not very good. And I'm not saying it won't be very good. I'm just saying, just in case, it's not very good. 27 and a half minutes past the hour on this Tuesday morning. Remember, we have got Cindy Price and Brian Blair from the Board of Elections coming up 8:30 until 9 o'clock this morning. And that's going to be a great conversation, because they are doing a tremendous job down there at the Board of Elections, and all kinds of questions that people have. Hopefully we can answer this morning, and also let people know that there is a candidates class coming up April 22nd, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., and make people aware of what's going on, because I know a lot of people have had a lot of questions in regard to voting and new voting machines in Marion, here in Marion. So we'll get it. I said Marion twice there, didn't I? Yeah. Well, live radio, that's the way it goes. So we'll go through all that. And again, we'll do trivia this morning, 9:15 until 10 o'clock. We've got some great stuff to give away and talk about some of the things we did not get to yesterday. But I do want to remind you again, because it's a big event that comes up every year. The Morrill United Methodist Church having their old-fashioned farm breakfast, 206 West Neff Street in Morrill, Ohio, 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 25th. That's this coming Saturday. It's an all-you-can-eat old-fashioned farm breakfast. Sausage gravy and biscuits, bacon, sausage, pancakes, scrambled eggs, home fries, orange juice, and coffee will be on the menu. Carry out is available. The church is wheelchair accessible, $6 for adults, $3 for children and under. You cannot beat that. You know something, scrambled eggs. Now, I do like scrambled eggs. Those are great. But that's one of the few things I eat ketchup on. Because, again, I'm not a huge ketchup person. I don't dislike ketchup. I mean, I'll put ketchup on a hot dog every so often, or a hamburger, or if I'm eating fries, sometimes I'll pull out the ketchup. But I'm not somebody who eats a lot of ketchup. But one thing I do like ketchup on is scrambled eggs, for whatever reason. Maybe just an interesting quirk. But I know people who put ketchup on everything, and some people who even put ketchup on macaroni and cheese. Have you ever known those people who put ketchup on macaroni and cheese? I've never understood that and never been able to, I've never been able to even stand to see somebody eat it that way. But that's the way it goes. 29 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short but important break here for about 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, we're going to have a great half-hour conversation with Cindy Price, Brian Blair from the Marion County Board of Elections. Stay tuned. Don't you dare go anywhere. You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
We're having fun every day from 1 to 3 p.m. on Now with Scott Spears right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Just ask legendary comedian Phyllis Diller.
Why hasn't the world found Scott and put him on a pedestal? And, you know, after all, Larry King can't live forever.
Or legendary actress Jane Meadows.
That's one of the reasons I tell you you're the best of all the interviewers. And that's why I love you and your show, dear.
Actress and singer Marla Gibbs.
As long as you breathe, you'd better believe it's never too late for life. So drop all your fear, 'cause as long as you're here, it's never too late for life.
Our professional wrestler and movie star Ox Baker.
I want to tell you, listeners of WWGH, this is Ox Baker. Mary Ohio, I know you listen to WWGH. You better start listening.
Or the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Hello there. How are you, Scott Spears? Ted Williams here in Columbus, Ohio. And Scott, I just want to let you know I love you as an individual. I always refer to Marion as being the home of WCMH's Bob Nunnally, and now I refer to it as the home of Scott Spears.
That's Now with Scott Spears, 1 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, right here on WWGH 107.1 FM, the place to be.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. And here we are back on this Tuesday morning, Tuesday, January the 21st, 2020, 33 minutes past the hour. And we're going to spend some time here with some great people from the Marion County Board of Elections, Cindy Price and Brian Blair. Thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for having us.
Before we get to any of the things we want to talk about, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your positions with the Marion County Board of Elections for people who aren't familiar?
Okay, well, I'm Cindy Price, and I am the Democrat. I'm the director at the Board of Elections, and I'm the Democrat representative. So the director and the deputy director are from both opposite, from the two differing parties. Just if you want to know a little bit about myself, I guess I'm a retired teacher of 31 years, so this is like a second career for me. So I sit on the Democratic Central Committee as secretary, and I'm the director at the Board of Elections.
Oh, very nice.
I'm Brian Blair. I'm the deputy director at the Marion County Board of Elections, and obviously if Cindy is the Democrat, then I'm the Republican. I am on the Central Committee for the Republican Party as well. And a little bit about me, I have worked privately in the private sector, or I've worked in the private sector previously. I was working with Hertz Car Rental as an area manager for the last 8.5 years. So,
Working at the Board of Elections, is that a fun position to be in?
Fun and very, very, very involved.
If you like learning, this is the job for you.
It is never, ever ending. So there's, you know, some people will say, well, you only have two elections a year. Well, they're welcome to come and sit in our office at any time. We are busy every day. The Secretary of State's office is always sending information. We're always looking to update voter registrations and so forth. So it's definitely a very busy job.
I would bet so. Let's talk a little bit about the primary election coming up. This is a big year. It's a presidential year. Mm-hmm. The primary election for this area will be on March the 17th. Tell us, in a presidential year, how something like that goes. What should people know?
So the primary election, the presidential primary is, like you said, March 17th, and the polls open at 6:30 a.m. At all of our polling locations. There are five issues, questions and issues for the local area here. Marion Township Fire Levy is a renewal, and it's 7.7 mils for 5 years. There is a corrections and rehabilitation levy, which is countywide, that was placed by the county commissioners, and it is an additional, and it is 2.0 mils for 5 years. Fort Morrow Fire District is an additional, and it is 2.5 mils for 5 years. Ridgedale Local School District is doing an earned income tax for 1%, and it will be continuous beginning in 2021. And then Marion County Board of Developmental Disabilities is 1.7 mils for 10 years. So we have five questions and issues that are locally impacting our residents of Marion County.
It's interesting, when we have a primary like this and there are issues on the ballot, I remember years ago the thing people used to say was they would get confused by the wording. Mm-hmm. Who comes up with the wording, and how important is the wording on a yes-no vote?
The ballot language is actually developed actually with each entity by resolution, and it actually follows the state of Ohio rules for the ballot language. And then we actually provide that as ballot language. We then have to proof it, run it by the Secretary of State's office and possibly our legal counsel before it's actually placed on the ballot. We then ask each entity that's placed something on the ballot to come in and proof their language so they know ahead of time exactly what's going to be on the ballot, so that way when they're out campaigning or getting, you know, supporting their issue, that they know exactly how it's worded on the ballot. So that's always helpful for everybody. And then once our ballots are completely created and on the machines, we also ask them to come in and look at the ballots on paper so they can actually see where it's placed and how it's worded on the actual ballot.
How are the decisions made of where things are placed on the ballot?
That's all driven by the Secretary of State's office. So, for example, they sent us our form of ballot last Tuesday, and it has to be in the specific order that the state has said that it's going to be on your ballot.
That's interesting.
Yep. So that's not a local choice.
Now, when it comes to the candidates in this primary election, as far as being a presidential primary, will there be some on the Republican side that were just, it's not as much news as obviously the Democratic side this time?
We actually will have a primary in both parties. There will be one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans. There will be also a Libertarian option, and then questions and issues. So we actually create four different ballots for this particular election. In Ohio, the only time you can choose your party is at a primary. So it's very important for people that actually want to choose a party, if they're going to do that, to come out in a primary election. If you want to remove your party affiliation, coming out and actually voting in a questions and issues only ballot is the best way to do that.
That's very interesting, because I've always wondered this, because I know different states have different rules. If you registered as a, let's say you registered as a Democrat, and you want to vote in the Republican primary because you registered 15 years ago and you've just never changed it, and you show up, can you vote in the Republican primary? Can you self-identify that day?
Absolutely. That's how your voter registration is changed in the state of Ohio. We have an open primary system where you can actually go in and change your party affiliation on that day. When you actually register to vote, we don't ask if you're a Republican or Democrat. You're just registering to vote at that point. You make that choice at the primary when you go in.
Now, not that this would happen, but because of the way the system's set up, would it be possible for somebody to vote in both primaries that day?
No.
No. Well, how would that kick out? Would that, on your end, would it kick out that the person had voted in both?
So when a person comes in to vote and they sign in at the poll pads, they're already in the system. So they couldn't come in and sign in a second time. But nobody is turned away to vote. So if that was the issue, if somebody said, well, I haven't voted, when actually our system says that they have, and there was any concern about that, they would actually be allowed to vote provisionally, and we could research it later. Then we could determine that, yes, they did check in previously, and then we would have their provisional ballot and their regular ballots.
Or if they had voted in a absentee form where they had mailed in a ballot, and once we checked that into our system, it would then be removed from the poll pad, or say that they've already voted. If that person says, oh, no, I didn't, or they forgot, because we do a month of in-person absentee and early voting via mail, that it's very possible that someone forgot that mm-hmm. they actually had mailed their ballot back in and they wanted to make sure they did actually have the opportunity to vote. They would go in and the poll worker would say, hey, it looks like you've already voted, but if you'd like to vote provisionally, we can do that, and then we'll research it to see if, you know, we'd received that ballot back. If we hadn't received it or something, then that vote would probably, their provisional ballot would then count.
It's interesting because we had a little, you know, hubbub with this last time. But if you, because I always hear now people saying they're independent. Now, I'm never sure if they're registered independent or not, but they say they're independent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you show up and you are a registered independent mm-hmm. and you vote in a Republican or Democratic primary, does your voter affiliation change in the system?
Yes.
It does?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about changing it back if you just, for some reason, wanted to vote in that primary?
The next primary, then you would pick the other party. So let's say, and then
questions and issues only ballot.
Yeah, so that's what I was getting ready to say. So questions, if you don't want to associate with the Republican or the Democratic Party, you just say, I just want to vote a questions and issues ballot. So as opposed to saying, I want to vote a Democrat ballot or I want to vote as a Republican, you just say, I want to questions and issues only. And then it does not affiliate you with either party.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. When it comes to voter registration, because this is a big deal, I know a lot of people get registered right out of high school, but a lot don't. How is this done now? How are people registering to vote, and how can you register?
Actually, the voter registration deadline is February 18th, and our office is open until 9 o'clock that evening. You can actually get online. You can register. You can come into our office. You can call our office. We'll send the paperwork to you. And the other thing is, a lot of people are not aware of this, too, that a 17-year-old can actually vote in the primary if they're going to be 18 before the general election. So we encourage 17-year-olds that will be 18 before the general election to come on in and register also, or call our office, and we'll send the paperwork so they can fill out a voter registration.
So as long as you'll be 18 before the November election, mm-hmm. you can vote in the primary.
Yes.
On March 17th.
Yes. Yeah.
For the candidates.
For the candidates.
Yeah, for the candidates.
Right.
Yep.
Not for the questions and issues, because they would not be legal age at that point.
Right.
So.
Yep.
There,
so we've had a couple.
Another special ballot made for 17-year-olds.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the other ballot we have. The 17-year-olds can come in and register. We've had actually somebody come in the other day as a 17-year-old and register. So.
Are most people in Marion County, or what would you say is the percentage, just roughly, of people who are registered voters at this point?
Well, the last census was, I believe, 60-some thousand, I believe, in Marion County. And
the population.
The population, right. And then the voter registration was about 38,000, 39,000.
Is that a good number compared to other counties, other states?
I've never sat down and compared that to other counties. I don't know the answer to that.
I have not either, so I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that's a very good question.
Over 50%.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
I would assume that's pretty good.
And you have to understand that the census also includes minors and, you know, children that are, you know, too young to actually vote. So that number is actually probably higher for the percentage of people that are actually registered to vote.
Now, in-person absentee voting, what exactly is the definition of that?
So you can contact our office now if you want an absentee ballot mailed to you. So our first set of absentee ballots will go out on February 19th, I believe. Yes, February 19th is when early in-person absentee voting begins. So you can contact our office now. We can mail a ballot to you. Or you can come into our office, and we have a list of dates available in our office and on our website of when our office will be open, and you can come in and check in and vote right in our office way before March 17th.
How big has this become in the last few elections?
Well, we've only been around for the last two elections, right. So I've seen an increase. I think that a lot of people didn't realize you could have a ballot mailed to you, so we hear lots of people say, oh, I didn't know that. I'm glad you told me that because, you know, we, you know, might go to Florida for the winter or whatever. And so I think a lot of people have really appreciated the fact that we can send absentee ballots to them, and I think people have been surprised.
It's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually just walk into the Board of Elections, vote. We're there from 8 to 5,
mm-hmm.
starting on the first day of early voting. We're in from 8 to 5. Monday through Friday. The second week, we're there from 8 to 5. Then the third week, it actually, we are there from 8 to 5. Then on Saturday, from 8 to 4. And the final week, it's from 8 to 7. So we're there till 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, from 8 to 4 on Saturday, and 1 to 5 on Sunday. So we have Sunday hours for people that, you know, work throughout the week. And I remember when I worked in retail, it was sometimes 8 to 8, and I wasn't able to get into any. I couldn't go to the office to do that early. So I actually usually went to the polls on election day and voted at 6:30 in the morning, and then I was off to work.
Mm-hmm.
So
And Brian and I have liked to term that as no excuse voting. You can have your ballot mailed to you. You have all those opportunities to come into our office and vote, and then you can also vote on election day. So we've kind of termed that no excuse voting, and people need to get out and vote. And we definitely want to reiterate the fact that the voter registration deadline is February 18th. So we want to make sure people are aware of that date.
Because that's just right around the corner.
Yes.
Less than a month now.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big questions, and I think maybe this is the biggest topic this morning, is the voting equipment, because we have had new voting equipment put in recently in Marion County. First of all, for people who don't understand why that was done, why was the voting equipment changed?
So the state of Ohio offered grants to help counties obtain the new voting equipment, and ours is a hybrid system. We have a touch screen and what we call the Freedom Votes, and so you would walk over to the Freedom Vote and you would be able to make all of your selections on the Freedom Vote machine. It then prints out a receipt. It's kind of like a grocery store receipt, and then you take that over to the ballot box, and when you take it to the ballot box and have it scanned, or you'll scan it into the ballot box, that's actually when you're casting your ballot. And so we've, made sure that on the end of our Freedom Votes, they're going to say, you know, make sure you cast your ballot at the ballot box. And then we also have poll workers that are going to be standing over by the ballot boxes just to make sure that people realize the process. You're going to go from the Freedom Vote machine to the ballot box. And then we've had a lot of election security.
Absolutely. The Freedom Votes are not connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form. There is absolutely no way they can be manipulated through Wi-Fi or anything like that. Then the ballot box itself is the only way that the ballots are actually cast. So those ballots are scanned front and back. Those are also not connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form. Those ballot boxes and the TMs in them have to actually be brought back to our office before we can actually read the information off of the scans, and then they're placed into a tabulation computer that then tabulates those results. So there's absolutely no way that they can actually be hacked into by, you know, nefarious sources.
Were the old machines hooked to the internet? Did they have an internet component?
I don't believe so.
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with the old machines.
So.
Now, when the new machines came out, was there a lot of confusion by people who went to the polls the first time in the first big election that they were used in, which I guess would have been last year? Yeah.
I don't believe so. We actually have, before each election, we have our voting equipment in our office available in our lobby if people want to come up and just kind of play around with it and see how it works. And we've had some people take advantage of that. So for this election, our dates are February 10th and February 11th from 8:30 to 4:30. They'll be available in our office if people just want to come in and see how the machine works and the process is. And then we also, just to add to Brian's election security, we also have logic and accuracy testing. So prior to each election, every single piece of equipment that is deployed and actually spares also go through an entire set of election or logic and accuracy testing. We have a staff of about 10 that come in and help with those, and every machine has to pass every single test in order to be used in the election. And then we also have a public test, which the public test this year is on for this election is February 13th at 10 a.m. And that's where the public can come in and see ballots being voted and then scanned and then put into the tabulation system that Brian was talking about and see how that whole process works.
Just to make this clear for people who go and vote, when you go and vote, you walk over to the voting machine, you choose your issues, your candidates, whatever you want to do, and now it spits out a receipt.
Can I back up
yes.
for just 1 second? So you would actually make that selection not at the voting machine. You would make that selection when you're checking in with a poll worker, so the poll worker knows if you are requesting a Republican ballot, Democratic ballot, or an issues only, or the 17-year-old ballot.
Right. Or Libertarian.
Or Libertarian.
Yep. And then you walk over to the machine, mm-hmm. and you make your choices at the machine of who you're going to choose or vote for issue-wise, whatever it is. And then at the end, the big difference, I think, that people see now is you get a receipt. A receipt
right.
pops out at the end.
Which I actually thought, I actually thought that was the greatest thing ever, especially for our county, because you can actually like look at that and verify your votes again. It's a double check. You can be like, hey, you know what? Did I actually mean to do that? I know there's a double check screen, but let's be honest, most of us just hit done or print or whatever and we move on. But now you actually print it out and you have a chance to look at what your votes actually are. You can double check it, make sure that's right. If it's not, you can go back to a poll worker and mm-hmm. say, hey, I made a mistake. I need to do this again. Mm-hmm. And they will actually soil and deface that ballot and we'll start the process over again for you. So everybody has a 100% accuracy or chance to be 100% accurate on their ballots, which I think is the greatest thing that we could possibly do for our voters.
Now, just so it's clear to people, when you vote at the machine, nothing has been registered yet.
Correct. You're just making your selections.
Just making your selections.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
So if you don't feed that receipt into the tabulation machine.
No, into the ballot box.
It's a ballot box. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the machine that you have to go to before you leave is called the ballot box.
That's correct.
Okay. So if you don't feed that receipt into that ballot box, nothing has been recorded.
That's correct.
Nothing's cast.
Nothing's cast. Were there
now any... you have checked in. So, I mean, you did check in to vote. So you do get credit for voting. But once again, that's another option that people have. If they decide, you know, this wasn't really what I wanted to do, I've decided I don't want to vote, they don't have to. We have a democracy, so they're allowed to actually choose to go to the polls, say, hey, I want credit for voting, but I don't really want to choose anybody that's actually on this ballot.
Were there any complaints with the new machines that you heard back?
The only thing that we probably heard most was people were – when the machines first came out in May – every single page would say done on the free to vote when they were making their selections. So we did get that complaint because I think people were kind of confused. And then I think people were confused. That's why we had people standing over by the ballot boxes, which is the scanner / ballot boxes. We had people, and we've tried to increase that signage. We've kind of increased the people that are by those as poll workers, because I think people did get confused because it is a two-step process. And they weren't used to, okay, now what do I do with this? And so we've tried to educate people and get better with that communication each election.
And now, there was also a issue with the red at the very end of the when you're done with your ballot, you can look it over on the screen, and some of those choices were red because if there were three choices and you had you could vote for up to three, some people only voted for one or two, and then it would show red. We've actually changed that to a pastel yellow. So it's a little bit less intimidating. It's not a, you didn't make a mistake. It's just, hey, caution, if you'd like to look at this again, you can. If you don't, hit print, and you're moving on your way.
And the other thing is, we didn't want people to automatically think that they had to go back and change something because something wasn't right. I mean, as a voter, you can choose whoever you want to and vote for as many as you want to. So even if it says select two or select three, if you want to just select one, that's fine also.
People get passionate on election day, and passion is a good thing in a lot of ways. But I have heard this question asked by a lot of people, too. We always get this question on election day. What are the rules when it comes to holding signs or campaigning close to a polling place?
So our markers are put out 100 foot from our polling location. We are in the middle of looking at private versus public land because we have had that question, and we are waiting for that answer between the Secretary of State's office and our local county prosecutor's office, because there has been some discussion of, well, what if it's not private land? Who determines that? And so we are looking and seeking that information prior to this election. But the rule for us is, for our office, as far as we get involved, is those flags are set 100 foot from the door. And after that, it is not our responsibility. We've marked where you cannot be. And so, like I said, our board is seeking clarification. We have a board of four people. We have two Republicans and two Democrats. So we have Lynn Zucker as our chair and Larry Heiser. They are the two Republicans. And then we have Carolyn Weston and Chris Smith are the two Democrats on the board. And they are seeking clarification exactly on that question. So
that'll be interesting because for some reason in recent years, that has become a much bigger issue than in past years. Now, when it comes to ballots, we talked about it earlier on about the wording, and sometimes people complain because they're not sure about the wording. But before you ever go and vote that day, you actually can look at the ballot.
Absolutely.
And make a call.
Absolutely.
Yep. We actually have sample ballots, and Brian will tell you a little bit about our website, but you can actually go in and select your own ballot and know exactly what it looks like before you get there and know exactly what is on your ballot. And Brian will go over our website with you.
So our website has actually just recently changed the location of our website to comply with the security directive that the Secretary of State has sent out. We had to go from a .com to a .gov address to be a little bit more secure. So our new website is actually boe.ohio.gov/Marion. However, if you go to marionelections.com, it will automatically link you over to the correct website now. So On that website, once we actually have finished our ballot, we will be placing the sample ballots on our website, and they're free for anybody to actually go and look at, to review, to make sure they can see what their ballot would look like. It will have the Republican option, the Democrat option, the Libertarian option, and the issues only option as well.
Now, if you had a question at that point on the wording of something or what the ballot looked like, you could call the Board of Elections
absolutely.
And ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, once you go in and start to vote, let's say you're at the polling place, and you go in and you get in there and you say, I'm not sure if yes means I'm for it or I'm against it. Can you walk away from the machine to ask somebody a question?
Well,
we can't clarify that for you because we're not going to interrupt the voting process. So that is not our poll worker's position to clarify that ballot at that time. But if you're not comfortable with it at that point in time, you can actually go back and say, hey, I want to cancel my voting, or I want to get a different ballot, or I want to go home and research it some more, or go talk to somebody and I'll be back. Absolutely. But our poll workers cannot clarify the ballot language for
you. We also have sample ballots available at the polling mm-hmm. location. If somebody wants to review their ballot mm-hmm. prior to going up to the Freedom Vote, they can actually ask for a sample ballot of their precinct.
Oh, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm, yeah. Now, a candidate's class is coming up on April 22nd, 5:30 mm-hmm. to 7:30 p.m. Tell us where this will be and exactly what this will be.
So the candidate's class, we had our first one this last October, and we probably had maybe 20 people there.
I think there were 18.
18, yeah. 18 people. So the candidate's class is just, if you've ever thought about running for office, there's always lots of questions about petitions and how do I circulate a petition and what are the rules and where do I find the rules. And so we just thought
that we'd have... What's campaign finance all about?
Yeah, what's campaign finance all about? So we had lots of questions, and so we just thought, you know, it was something Brian and I both were interested in doing when we first started is, you know, let's try to get the word out there. Obviously, that's why we're here on information today. But so for candidates is, what do you need to do to run for office? And so they attended, and we had lots of compliments about that class. We would like to offer that every 6 months. So we went ahead and scheduled the next one for April 22nd at 5:30. Yeah. And so it's just a time where people can, like I said, find out how and where they get information and how do I run for office. And so it was really beneficial. We definitely, it'll be something we continue to do.
Absolutely.
Now, when it comes to poll workers, I've heard a lot of people say they would like to be poll workers. How do I do this?
Give them our number.
Yeah. Yeah, they give them the number. Send them down.
Yeah. Send them straight in.
Are there a shortage of poll workers in Marion?
So the legislation changed last year that we can actually go from four poll workers per precinct to a minimum of two per precinct. We're not ready to go there yet. I don't know that we ever will. So we know that we can use a few less poll workers. However, it's always a challenge finding poll workers that are going to work our polls for the day. And so they do have to complete a training class, which is about an hour and a half, 2 hours long. And then, of course, work on election day. We have tried to encourage, Brian and I know made several visits to different civic organizations, Lions Clubs and Kiwanis and so forth, and spoke to different groups. And then we also have tried to do a push. It's called Youth at the Booth. And so we've tried to do a push to get high school, those 17-year-old kids to come out and work the polls. And we had 17 in November, pretty
17.
Close. So we were pretty excited about that, and we've already gotten some from a couple of area guidance counselors and school personnel. They've already given us some names for this next election, so we're pretty excited about that. Each of the area high schools and Tri Rivers were contacted to see if we could get some poll workers for election day. So that's always helpful to get them involved in the election process. So to be a poll worker, you just call our office, and of course, it also depends on, you know, where our needs are for our Republican versus Democrat poll workers. Like Brian said, give them our number, and actually we'll give that to you. It's 740-223-4090. Call in. Let us know that you want to be a poll worker. Our poll worker training actually begins on January 31st. So
we just recently increased the pay for our poll worker mm-hmm. training. So mm-hmm. Obviously everybody loves to make sure they're getting paid. We were only paying $10 for this two-hour training class previously. Mm-hmm. Our board has looked at that and said, you know, it's not really in the right realm of where we are right now in 2020, and they've increased that to $25. So you're going to get $25 just for going to the training, and then the poll workers for that 14-hour day get $110.50, I think. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Yeah. I believe
now,
that's correct.
When you sign up to be a poll worker, do you have to stay the whole day?
Yes.
You do. So that's you have to be there the entire time.
Yes. Now, if we ever would get to the point where we have tons of poll workers, you know, we could maybe do a split shift of some sort. But right now, that is definitely not the situation in Marion County.
Are there any, we certainly understand age requirements on the younger end, being 17. Are there any age requirements on the older end, or is there a particular disability that could not be dealt with if you have a
problem? Absolutely not. Nope. We welcome anybody to come and work our polls.
This has been a great conversation. And with the last minute we have here before we're going to go to break at the top of the hour, is there anything we forgot to mention?
I guess I would like to reiterate that voter registration deadline is February 18th. You can start in-person absentee voting on February 19th in our office. And then call our office if you want a ballot sent to your home, and you can do that right now. We're actually already sending out absentee ballot requests.
I was going to say the requests. We are not sending the ballots out yet. Yep, we're not quite finished with that.
And before we leave here today, I think just a lot of people are curious because there was a lot of interesting things at the Board of Elections the last couple years. How are things now? That's what people want to know. How are things down there now?
We actually get lots of compliments. Absolutely. Brian and I work very well together, even though he's the Republican representative and I'm the Democrat representative. I mean, it's a team effort, and you know, we don't wear our party hats to work. It's our office belongs to the taxpayers, but the voters in Marion County, and so that's our focus, and that's who needs to be the forefront of our thoughts.
Absolutely.
So everything is well again.
Yes,
I think that's good to hear.
Are there, because there were complaints for a while that voting machines were not spitting out the right ballots and tests were not going right. The last test that we've had, is everything all hunky-dory now?
We actually, after the general, had to go through an audit, and we've matched that audit at 100%.
Yeah, the audit was 100%. Recounts. We've actually had 3 automatic recounts since we've been there, which we were not anticipating 3 automatic recounts. We had one that was actually a tie vote. One city council race was decided by one vote.
One vote.
And then we had the MCBDD in the May Village that went down. The Leroux Village was a tie. We actually had to flip a coin. And then we went and we've done those recounts. They've come out 100% accurate every time.
People have asked me that because we did have the city council race that came down to one vote. Would that have gone to the flip of a coin? Is that how that works?
If it's a tie.
Right.
That seems amazingly odd.
Well, I mean, in that situation, you also have to understand that, you know, 50% of the people that voted for one candidate and 50% voted for the other. So there's really no good way of saying your candidate didn't win. You know, so when you flip that coin, it's chance. It's the one thing that's fair to everybody is the chance.
So in the directive, that direction is given to us as far as how to break a tie, and that actually has to be done in a public meeting by our board.
And it has to be done prior to the recount.
Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yep. So the other thing I wanted to reiterate, we were talking earlier about the security of our elections equipment. The other thing is all of our equipment we have seal tracking, so everything is sealed. And so any time a seal is broken on, let's say when they had to do anything to any of the equipment, so if they ever have to break a seal, it has to be 2 members of opposite parties. So everything that's done on election day, you'll see 2 members of opposite parties.
Oh. Yep. It's great to know. This has been very informative. I can't thank you enough both for coming down here today, Cindy Price and Brian Blair.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes,
thank you. County Board of Elections. If there's anything more you'd like to talk about, please let us know.
Absolutely.
We'll be back in about 10 minutes after news and weather. Stay tuned.
You come home, you dirty old rascal, because your kids and my kids are a-beating up ours. Where, oh, where are you tonight?
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions, don't text and drive.
Visit stoptextstoprex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the